Chapter 34. Surprise is the key for any successful clandestine operation, and the surprise takeover of the Lady Flamborough was total. Except for Captain Collins, First Officer Finney, and a stunned purser, who were bound, gagged, and closely guarded in Finney's cabin, none of the other officers or crew had the vaguest idea their ship had been hijacked. Amar cut his timing to a fine edge. The bona fide Uruguayan customs inspectors showed up only 12 minutes later. He greeted them as if they were old acquaintances in his makeup and near-perfect disguise as Collins. The men he had hand-picked to play the roles of Finney and the purser kept to the shadows. They were both experienced ship's officers and bore a remarkable resemblance to their counterparts. Few crew members would have noticed the facial differences outside of 3 meters. The Uruguayan officials cleared the vessel and were soon on their way. Amar called Collins's second and third officers to the captain's cabin. This would be his first and most crucial test. If he passed their inspection without arousing suspicion, they would become invaluable to him as innocent accomplices to carry out the complicated plot in the next 24 hours. Making himself up to look like Dale Lemke, the pilot of Nebula Flight 106, was not a difficult process. Amar had easily cast a plaster mold from Lemke's face after he'd murdered him. Disguising himself to pass as the captain of the Lady Flamborough was another matter. He was forced to work from only 8 photographs of Collins obtained on short notice by one of his agents in Britain. He also had to inject himself with a compound that raised his voice to an identical level with recordings of Collins's voice. He hired a skilled artist to sculpt a likeness of Collins's face from the photos. Male and female molds were cast from the sculpture. Next, a natural latex, dyed to match Captain Collins's skin coloring, was pressed between the molds and set aside until gelatin occurred, and then baked. He trimmed and carefully fitted the latex mask, using a resin-wax mixture to match minor changes in facial structure. Then Amar applied foamed ear and nose prosthetics and added makeup. Finally, a correctly dyed, barbered, and parted hairpiece, contact lenses to match the color of Collins's eyes, tooth caps, and Amar became the spitting image of the cruise liner's captain. Amar did not have the time to study Oliver Collins's personality profile in depth or study the captain's mannerisms. He just managed to take a cram course on shipboard duties and memorize the names and faces of the ship's officers. He had no choice but to bluff it out, relying correctly on the assumption the crew did not have the slightest reason to be skeptical. As soon as the two officers stepped into the captain's cabin, Amar immediately acted to tip the scales in his favor. "Pardon me, gentlemen, for sounding and looking a bit under the weather, but I've picked up a case of the flu." "Shall I send for the ship's doctor?" asked Second Officer Herbert Parker, physically fit, suntanned, with a smooth, boyish face that seemed as if it saw a razor only on Saturday evenings. A near mistake, thought Amar. A doctor familiar with Collins would have spotted the masquerade in a flash. "He's already given me enough pills to choke an elephant. I feel fit enough to muddle through my duties." The third officer, a Scot with the unlikely name of Isaac Jones, pushed aside a shag of red hair from his high forehead. "Anything we can do, sir?" "Yes, Mr. Jones, there is," answered Amar. "Our VIP passengers will be arriving tomorrow afternoon. You will be in charge of the welcoming party. We don't often have the honor of entertaining 2 presidents, and I should think the company will expect us to carry out a first-rate ceremony."
"Yes, sir," snapped Jones. "Depend on it."
"Mr. Parker?"
"Captain."
"A landing craft will arrive within the hour to transship a cargo for the company. You will be in charge of the loading operations. A team of security people will also be coming aboard this evening. Please see they are provided with suitable quarters."
"Rather short notice, isn't it, sir, taking on cargo? And I thought the Egyptian and Mexican security agents weren't due until early morning."
"Our company directors work in mysterious ways," Amar said philosophically. "As to our armed guests, company orders again. They want their own security personnel on board in case of a problem."
"A matter of one security team overseeing another?"
"Something like that. I believe Lloyd's demanded extra precautions, or they threatened to raise our insurance rate to some astronomical height."
"I understand.
Any questions, gentlemen?"
There were none, and the two officers turned to leave.
"Herbert, there is one more thing," said Amar. "Please load the cargo as quietly and quickly as possible."
"I will, sir."
Once they were out of earshot on the deck, Parker turned to Jones.
Did you hear that? He called me by my first name. Don't you think that jolly queer?
Jones shrugged indifferently. He must be sicker than we thought. The landing craft came alongside, and a small cargo boom was run out. The loading operation went smoothly. The rest of Amar's men, dressed in business suits, also came on board and were assigned to four empty suites. By midnight, the landing craft slipped into the darkness and was gone. The Lady Flamborough's cargo boom was pulled into the hold out of sight, and the large double loading doors were closed. Amar rapped five times on Finney's door and waited. The door was cracked slightly, and the guard stood back. Amar took a quick look up and down the carpeted passageway and entered. He nodded toward the captain. The guard moved forward and stripped the tape from Collins's mouth.
I regret the inconvenience, Captain, but I suppose it would be a waste of words to ask you to give me your word you won't attempt to escape and warn your crew.
Collins sat stiffly in a chair, his arms and legs chained together, and glared at Amar with murder in his eyes.
You sordid sewer filth.
You British have a literary quality to your insults that is quite amusing. An American would have simply used a four-letter word meaning the same thing.
You'll get no cooperation from me or my officers.
Not even if I order my men to slit the throats of your female crew members one by one and throw their bodies to the sharks?
Finney lunged at Amar, but the guard swiftly thrust the butt end of his automatic rifle into the first officer's groin. Finney fell back into his chair with a muffled groan, his eyes glazed in pain.
Collins's eyes never left Amar.
I'd expect as much from a band of subhuman terrorists.
We are not ignorant juveniles out to butcher infidels, Amar explained patiently. We are top-line professionals. This is not a repeat of the unfortunate Achille Lauro episode of a few years back. We do not intend to murder anyone. Our purpose is simply to hold Presidents Hassan and De Lorenzo and their staffs for ransom. If you do not stand in our way, we shall make our deal with their respective governments and be on our way.
Collins studied Amar's mirrored face, searching for the lie, but the Arab's eyes reflected genuine honesty. He could not know Amar was a master at theatrical deception.
But you wouldn't hesitate to butcher my crew otherwise.
And you too, of course.
What do you want from me?
You, actually nothing.
Mr. Parker and Mr. Jones have accepted me as Oliver Collins. It's First Officer Finney whose services I require. You will order him to obey my commands.
Why Finney? Asked Collins.
I opened the desk file in your cabin and read the officer's personal records. Finney knows these waters.
I don't see what you're getting at.
We cannot afford the risk of calling for a pilot, explained Amar.
Tomorrow after dark, Finney will take the helm and steer the ship through the channel into the open sea.
Collins calmly considered that. Then he slowly shook his head.
Once the port authorities get onto you, they'll block the harbor entrance whether you threaten to kill everyone on board or not.
A darkened ship can slip out on a dark night, Amar assured him.
How far do you expect to go? Every patrol boat within 100 miles will have you boxed in by daylight.
They won't find us.
Collins looked slightly dazed.
That's crazy. You can't hide a ship like the Lady Flamborough.
Quite true, said Amar, a cold, knowing smile forming on his lips. But I can make her invisible.
Jones was bent over a desk in his cabin making notes for the morning's welcoming ceremonies when Parker knocked on the door and entered. He looked tired and his uniform was damp with sweat.
Jones turned and looked at him.
Loading duty finished?
Yes, thank God.
How about a nightcap?
A glass of your good Scottish malt whiskey?
Jones rose and lifted a bottle from a dresser drawer. He poured two glasses and handed one to Parker.
Look at it this way, he said. You were relieved of standing early morning anchor watch.
I'd have preferred that to cargo loading, said Parker tiredly. What about you?
Just got off duty.
I wouldn't have bothered you if I hadn't seen a light through your port.
Burning the midnight oil, making sure everything runs tick-tock smooth tomorrow.
Finney isn't about, and I felt I had to talk to someone.
For the first time, Jones noticed the confused expression in Parker's eyes.
What's bothering you?
Parker downed the scotch and stared at the empty glass.
We've just taken on the damnedest cargo I've ever seen come on board a cruise liner.
What did you load? Asked Jones, his curiosity aroused.
Parker sat quite still, shaking his head.
Painting gear.
Air compressors, brushes, rollers, and 50 drums of what I assumed was paint.
Jones couldn't resist asking, What color?
Parker shook his head.
Can't say. The drums were marked in Spanish.
Nothing odd about that. The company must want it on hand when the Lady Flamborough goes in for a refit.
That's only the half of it. We transshipped huge rolls of plastic.
Plastic?
And great sheets of fiberboard, Parker continued. We must have loaded kilometers of the stuff. We barely squeezed it through the loading doors, mucked around a good 3 hours just trying to stow it.
Jones stared at his glass through half-open eyes. What do you suppose the company plans to do with it?
Parker looked up at Jones with a puzzled frown. I haven't the foggiest idea.